This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Adam Barillet for the very final All Natural. Joining in the studio is one of our favourite guests at All Natural. She's been a very loyal guest here, Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. Good morning.
Hello, how are you going?
I'm very well, and of course the Wilderness Society and yourself have been flat out and busy.
Very, very busy. I don't know how busy we could be in the lead up to World Environment Day, which is coming up in early June. So there's certainly a lot going on. I guess it's also probably got something to do with the crisis we find ourselves in here on this planet. Unfortunately, we're facing ecological collapse around the world. And here in Australia, it's no different. And in fact, right here on our doorstep in Victoria, some of the best forest here in the state continues to be logged. And I don't know how many of the listeners saw the article in the Age newspaper on Monday, but there was a very good article.
Now, is that the one that said declared forests turn out to be paddocks?
That's right,
that was
Adam.
The title? Yeah.
So what the then Bracks ALP government did in 2006 in the lead up to the state election then was promise to protect 41,000 hectares of old growth forest here in Victoria.
That sounds pretty impressive.
It sounds pretty good. I mean, it's a very small subset of what we, the Wilderness Society and other forest conservation groups, would like to see protected. We had an ask for 900,000 hectares of forest.
Okay.
So 40,000 is but a very tiny subset. It's still significant, it's still good, and we'd love them to deliver on that promise.
Yes.
The problem is, 30 months later, they haven't delivered on the promise. The forest continues to fall. And in fact, as we saw in the Age on Monday, it's now been exposed that some of those areas of so-called old growth forest certainly weren't that. They're just cow paddocks. In fact, there's a sign on the road that says Cattle on Road here. And if anyone's seen the image, it looks like a wheat field, pretty much. It's certainly not old growth forest. So there's some very important work that the government needs to do to make sure that when they deliver this promise, which we hope is very soon, that the areas they're actually protecting really are the magnificent old growth forest they're claiming them to be.
So who's kind of mapped the area which is meant to be old growth forest and kind of slip that one in and go there?
Oh, it's a bit of a mystery, really. We're not too sure. I think that we've tried to, you know, backtrack and go down a few burrows to work out where this map came from, and it's certainly not an old growth forest map.
Yep.
Let's put it that way. So moving forward, the Wilderness Society and a bunch of other forest groups did go to the government with a very robust proposal, which did accurately map truly old growth forest and say, look, if you want to deliver on this promise and be well applauded and actually do a good service for all Victorians, then this is what you need to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, quite a few months ago, we presented them with a rigorous map, which did have good stands of old growth forest on it. And unfortunately, during that time, we've seen some of those areas actually be logged. And one of those is one that we've talked about in this show before, Brown Mountain.
Really? Now, since that article came out on Monday, it was Monday, that article?
Yeah.
Has the government responded at all?
Yeah, so there's been some more negotiations and discussions with the government, and the latest word is that we'll hear back from them about what the reserve design might actually be in the next couple of weeks. They've told us that for months now, so it remains to be seen what will actually come out. But we look forward to a good announcement where we can congratulate Minister Jennings, the Minister for the Environment, and indeed Premier Brumby, who badly needs to do something good for the environment.
Yep.
He's got disaster after disaster after disaster on his hands here with the desalination plant. He reopened the duck shooting season. He's continuing to log old growth forests this coming summer, despite the devastating fires and despite the drought and the huge water shortages. He's continuing to allow the logging of our forests in our water catchments, which has a huge impact on water quality and on water quantity. So it would be good for Premier Brumby to deliver a good outcome here.
Once would be nice, for sure. Now, it seems that you're always going to the government with proposals and ideas and research that you've commissioned and things like that. Does the government ever come to you?
They do. They do come to us and ask us what we think about a different range and of proposals and different ideas. But, of course, it would be good if the dialogue was perhaps a bit more transparent, occurred a bit more often. And indeed, it's important for the government to talk to a range of environment groups.
Yes.
And we've seen that most recently with the split in the environment movement around a response to the Rudd government's proposed extension to the CPRS, the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme. So a couple of weeks ago, Prime Minister Rudd came out and said, well, we're going to continue to dither about for another year and maybe we'll deliver something in a year about how the country might move forward on climate change. And the Wilderness Society was one group which said that's not good enough.
Yeah, we might talk about that after one more song. We've got so much to talk about this hour. Amelia, one day I hope we get to the point where I ring up and go, what do you want to talk about today? And you go, it doesn't talk about everything's running fine.
Oh, wouldn't that be good?
It would be nice.
Hi, this is Michelle Clooney. You may know me as Melanie from Queer as Folk. You're listening to Adam Barillet on Joy 94.9.
Joining me in the studio is Amelia Young. Amelia, we touched on just before that song, Kevin Rudd's announcement about the ETS, the CPRS, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Where basically they've decided to put back the carbon trading scheme by a year. Mm. And you said there's divided green groups. Now, I think Greenpeace, who I spoke to last week, actually said that was a good thing.
Mm.
Now, you disagree and say it's about...
Oh, no. It's a good thing.
It's definitely
a good thing that some environment groups have come out saying, look, this isn't good enough.
Yep.
And it's appalling that groups like the Australian Conservation Foundation have actually given it the big green tick.
Okay.
And this is part of the problem,
yep,
is that some environment groups have said, yep, you know what, Kevin, that's okay.
Yep.
And the rest of us are saying it's simply not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the range of groups who are saying it's not good enough are, as you mentioned, Greenpeace and the Wilderness Society, the local climate action groups,
yep,
around the country have said that's absolutely devastating. And, of course, the Greens have said it's no good as well. They're,
yep,
interested in seeing a much more robust CPRS, which properly factors in forests,
yep,
to begin with. But I thought I'd actually just read out for the listeners a letter that's in today's Age about it, because it actually captures some of the sentiment and some of the problems with the CPRS. And this letter says, Rudd is devastating on climate change. Kevin Rudd has learned well his lessons from the master John Howard. When you know that you must appear to take action on an issue, but that action would upset your mates, i.e. the coal industry, the solution is to facilitate the discussion in a subtle way so that the outcome will be a proposal so awful it cannot be supported. This is, in fact, what's been happening. Then, when it has been defeated in the Senate, you blame everyone else for not supporting it. This is exactly how Howard manipulated the Republic debate. As the strategic trajectory of the carbon pollution reduction scheme nears its climax, Penny Wong has started to deflect the blame. Do you really want to go to the Australian people and say, I voted down action on climate change? Rudd will go to the next election claiming he tried to take action on climate change and he was not responsible for its failure. So he can satisfy his fossil fuel mates by doing nothing while blaming his inaction on everyone else. Simple, elegant, and devastatingly effective.
Mm.
Pretty much sums it up. Playing politics with the future of our planet.
Yes. Now I'm going to play a slight devil's advocate here. Someone said that the carbon trading scheme is due to start in 2020. Is that right?
Well, they're not. They want to see a bunch of energy being sourced from renewables by 2020.
Okay.
Mm. So that's one date. There's a series of different dates flying around. I think that there's different proposals around when different stages and mechanisms will be implemented. And so one of the proposals is that there'll be 20% of our energy being sourced from so-called renewables by,
yes,
2020. That's right.
Okay. I also have issues with we'll wait and see what the rest of the world decides and then we'll decide too.
Mm. So at the end of this year, the next international climate treaty, Kyoto Mark II, some,
yep,
people are,
that's
referring
at Copenhagen?
To it. That's right. It's in Copenhagen. And that's the next big meeting where a framework will be drawn up and hopefully ticked off on. And there are some people in the climate movement who are very worried that, in fact, these decision makers and policy writers won't actually be able to come to an agreement at Copenhagen, which is pretty disappointing for a lot of us citizens, not least ecosystems and other species, which are going to be hugely impacted by climate change, of course, too.
Now, President Obama in the USA, is he better than Rudd?
At the moment, he seems to be. But you know, at the start of Rudd's prime ministership, he seemed to be better than Howard as well, didn't he?
Yes. Mm. Yep, true. Mm.
Remains to be seen. The proof is in the pudding. And,
yep,
actually, as you've mentioned, Copenhagen will be interesting. But in fact, there are some other climate negotiations coming up in Bonn just in the next 10 days or so.
Okay.
And actually, what happens in Bonn is very important as well. And what comes out of the meeting at Bonn will indicate what kind of an outcome we might be seeing at Copenhagen.
That's not receiving too much media coverage.
No, it's a smaller meeting, but,
yep,
there'll be some interesting things coming out of it that will be covered. I would anticipate. But of course, there'll be updates on our website at www.wilderness.org.au. Some of our forest campaigners are going to Bonn. And it's very important that they're there, because if the Wilderness Society's campaigners don't go to these climate meetings, we're finding that actually forests are being left off the agenda.
Okay. So the Wilderness Society will be there. Who is actually meeting there? Are the presidents and prime ministers going? Or
that's right, or their delegates. For instance, Louise Hand, who is Australia's chief climate negotiator, she'll be going to the Bonn meeting, and she'll be lobbying and negotiating on behalf of Australia.
Is she a good guy or a bad guy?
At the moment, she seems to be a pretty good girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how does she fit in with the thing compared to her and Penny Wong?
Well, Penny Wong is a Minister for Climate Change, and she sits in the Senate, so she's an elected representative. Louise Hand is a bureaucrat who has been employed.
Okay, I understand
to act
the difference.
In this capacity. That's right. And then, of course, also at these meetings, we have representatives of different Indigenous nations from across the planet. We have representatives of non-government organisations like the Wilderness Society. There are representatives of industry lobby groups like VAFI, the Victorian Association of Forest Industries. Even they send someone over because they want to make sure that they'll actually be able to claim a carbon credit for the tiny, minuscule amount of carbon that they might happen to lock up in a chair if they make a chair out of our forest. But as we all know, most of what's logged in Victoria's forest is in fact wood chipped.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dr. John DeMartini, and you're listening to Adam Barillet on Joy 94.9.
World Environment Day is next week, the 5th of June. What's the Wilderness Society doing in the next few weeks?
Well, Adam, over the next few weeks, we're having these World Environment Day Forests and Climate Public Forums. And there's three in the inner city, and we just heard the ad for those. One in Richmond, one in Brunswick, and one in Kensington. And these meetings are really an opportunity for the community to hear about the science that underpins our forests and climate campaign work.
Is there a reason you're doing inner city kind of meetings?
Well, we hold these all over Melbourne, mm-hmm. all over Victoria, in fact. And most recently, we held one in March down in Bentley. And it just so happens that around World Environment Day, we thought we'd hold one where the bulk of our members and supporters live, and also where we find that there's many, many people who are interested in finding out more as well.
Does it seem that in the more inner city areas, people are a bit more transient? Like, I know the seats are a bit harder to keep hold of in the inner city.
Oh, they're certainly politically sensitive, yes.
So you can sometimes influence a bit more change in those because people are a bit more volatile and changing.
More swinging voters, you think?
Yeah.
Perhaps, but yes, there's a lot of swinging voters out in the eastern suburbs as well.
Yep.
And there's politically sensitive areas in regional Victoria as well.
Yeah, true. Mm. Now, these meetings are happening in the evening. I've come home from work after a 9-to-5 day. Why should I come to one of your meetings, Amelia?
Well, it's important to come and find out about the wonderful work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to come and find out about the ins and outs of these very complex climate negotiations. And it's a good opportunity to find out about some of the science, the groundbreaking science that came out of the Australian National University, the ANU, last year, the Green Carbon Report. And this is the science that we at the Wilderness Society use to inform our campaign activities, both here in Australia when it comes to forests, and also now internationally as well. So a minute ago when I mentioned that our campaigners are off to Bonn next week,
yes.
Well, they'll be going off with copies of this Green Carbon Report in hand and actually taking the science to these international climate negotiations. Because one of the problems at the moment is that at this international level, the methodologies are being set and they're not using accurate data. And that's one of the exciting things about the Green Carbon Report, is that for the first time, we actually have some reliable and accurate data for native forests.
Another thing I was just thinking about these meetings as well is Lorna Luft, who was in the studio last hour, Judy Garland's daughter, said, "I think it's important to give something back to the world." And when you think, we all go to work each day and we do our thing and we earn our money so we can do what we need to do to survive. But it's nice to also have a vocation or something where you're giving something back. And the Wilderness Society could be a great way to do that.
That's right. So it's an opportunity for our volunteers.
I'm guessing many of the people, possibly the people that are going to Bonn, might have once upon a time had a 9-to-5 job, started off just doing a little bit of volunteering work and that type of thing. And now they're actually really contributing to the world. And probably, if you're not satisfied with your 9-to-5 job, this could be the first step to doing something that actually
is
a bit more fulfilling.
Mm.
Now, the Green Carbon Science Report, tell me a little bit more about that.
Okay, so for the first time, we now have some accurate science which shows that Victoria's forests, or Australia's southeastern eucalypt forests, store far more carbon than was previously thought. So as trees are growing, they're photosynthesizing and they're sucking or sequestering carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Now, this is a very good thing because, of course, climate change is caused by excess levels of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And at the moment, intact forests and growing vegetation is actually the only technology we have to do something about all the excess carbon dioxide out there in the atmosphere.
And I think I touched on this point, but it's an important one as well, is a lot of focus on reducing the amount of carbon that we're emitting, but we also need to worry about the carbon that is being emitted. What's going to happen to that? And if we chop down trees, we could emit half the amount of carbon, but it's still going to sit around if the trees aren't sucking it up, I guess.
That's right, Adam. We're actually not, as a global community, going to be able to solve climate change unless we do something about the logging and deforestation of the world's forests, and that includes the logging of Victoria's forests. Even if we significantly reduce our emissions from burning fossil fuels, we're not going to be able to solve the climate challenge because we're still causing huge emissions from logging and deforestation, and every time we log the forests, we're reducing the Earth's capacity to actually sequester the carbon dioxide back out of the atmosphere.
It's the other side of the coin, basically, isn't it?
It is. The global carbon cycle, the Earth's key regulator of carbon is, in fact, our forests.
Now, if I was to ring possibly someone in New York or someone in Spain or someone in London now and say, tell me about the great forests of the world and, you know, the valuable forests that we really need to save, we'd probably hear things like the Amazon. Is the idea when we go to Bond is to actually show how valuable the forests are in Victoria and Australia globally? Do you think that's recognised at this point in time?
That's right. Every forest anywhere on the planet is important from an ecological perspective for species, from a water quality perspective, from a habitat perspective, and, of course, from a climate perspective. But what's less understood is that it's the temperate forests in the world that, in fact, store far more carbon than even the forests in the Amazon or Indonesia. It's true to say that these forests do also store carbon, but the temperate forests are far more carbon rich. And this is because they're hardwoods, so they're very, very dense. They grow fairly fast, but not so fast so that they're sucking, storing and releasing the carbon dioxide at a fast rate, such as in the tropical forests. So the life cycle is much faster in these warmer, wetter areas. The temperate forests, it's a bit cooler. So these forests actually have time to become carbon banks. They store carbon dioxide as carbon through time.
Apart from Australia, where else do we find these temperate kinds of forests?
Oh, in parts of North America, in New Zealand.
Yeah,
it's the latitude on the globe where it's not so cold that we have boreal forests like those in northern Canada or in Siberia, and it's not so warm that we have temperate tropical forests.
So we're kind of looking, I guess, below the tropic and above the tropic.
That's
of
right.
Capricorn and Cancer.
That's
yeah,
right.
Around those areas.
Exactly.
Okay. Not the around the equator kind of things.
And Australia is fortunate because we still have a fair bit of this type of forest left. Of course, a huge amount is gone. 92% of Victoria's old growth forest has been logged or cleared since Europeans have colonisation.
Wow.
So it's been hugely impacted, but even that 8% that we've got left is more than other countries have left.
I just had one very obvious question that I forgot to ask you before. Where is Bond?
Bonn in Germany.
Bonn, okay.
B-O-N-N.
Yeah. Okay. Not Bond.
Not Bond.
James Bond.
Yeah, it might be in the movies somewhere. Who knows?
Yes.
Sometimes these climate negotiations do seem a bit fanciful and perhaps like stuff of the movie.
Well, we need a hero to come save us, don't we?
We do.
Yes. You're listening to Adam Berrell.
The Wilderness Society.
Yes. You're listening to Adam Berrell's All Natural on Joy 94.9. I'm joined in the studio by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. We'll be back soon.
Hi, this is Chad Jules, and you're listening to Adam Berrell on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Adam Berrell's All Natural, the last All Natural, and I'm joined by one of our favourite guests, Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. We're talking about what the Wilderness Society is doing over the next few weeks. Other things you've been actually doing a letterbox drop in some of the suburbs around. I'm looking at one of the flyers at the moment. I'm sure it's on very good paper. Yes, it is printed on 100% post-consumer recycled paper.
Certainly is.
Yes.
And if people want to know how they can find out about what sort of paper to use in their photocopier or printer at work or even your printer at home, our paper guide is downloadable from our website and it's recently been updated.
Which I must applaud yourselves and some of the other groups are bringing out guides that the government's not bringing out. You've got your paper guide. I think Greenpeace has got its the wood guide.
Yeah, that's
released.
Right. The decking and things like that.
The Australian Conservation Marine Society, they've got a sustainable seafood and where to buy your fish from. So these are all really good guides to have around, you know, when you're going down to buy your fish or going to buy paper.
Yep, exactly. I use that fish guide. I don't eat animals myself, but I am concerned, obviously, for my daughter and that she grows a good brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so fish is very important. And I did actually whip that little fish guide out of my wallet when I was there the other week and made sure I chose a good fish for her dinner that night.
Because it would be great, but I wouldn't expect your average person selling wood, person selling fish, or person selling paper to know.
To know or perhaps even to care.
Yes.
It's up to consumers to actually create a demand for these kinds of products. And one of the problems here in Australia is that, in fact, there is no Australian-made 100% post-consumer waste copy paper available on the market.
Wow.
The only one that is good that we can actually suggest people buy comes all the way from France. And even though there are, of course, emissions from shipping that product from Europe to Australia, those emissions are less than buying a paper that is made from Victoria's native forests. And the reason for that is, of course, because these forests are so incredibly carbon rich and logging them is causing climate change. Every time some of the forests are logged here in Victoria, there's a massive release of greenhouse gas in the form of carbon dioxide. And that huge greenhouse gas event is actually bigger than shipping the paper from Europe to Australia. Yeah, it's just insane.
Wow. I've seen some really... You see some intriguing things that are happening in Europe. Some people being really creative on ways to tackle environmental crisis. Mm. And I've seen whole suburbs and streets that are all,
yes,
like carbon neutral or, yep, like each street generates its own power. And if the street runs out of power, then tough luck.
Yep.
Your street's without power, you've got to work out how to get it, kind of thing. And it's good to see that that's happening, yep, in Europe. It would be great to see that kind of creativity in Australia on a bigger scale. And it's also like the architecture is being creative as well. And Melbourne, one thing I love about Melbourne is coming from Perth, in Perth they build a building and that's a building. In Melbourne, they build a building and then they stick some pretty colours on it and they make it artistic. Do you know what I mean? They just, and it would be nice to actually create that creativity and artisticness with the environmental influences and combine that together in Melbourne. I think we'd be really good at that in this state.
Yeah. There are some exciting initiatives. I mean, plenty of the architecture faculties at universities have some very good projects and competitions for students around eco-design. And there's an organisation called the Green Star Building Association, the GBCA, Green Building Council of Australia. That's,
yes,
what it is. And they have the Green Star system, the rating system.
Okay.
And they afford green stars to different kinds of buildings. And there are some very good examples here in Melbourne where the green building on Leicester Street in Carlton, where Environment Victoria and the Victorian National Parks Association are housed. And in fact, Greg Barber has his office there too, one of the Greens MLAs here in Victoria. That's a Green Star rated building. And this outfit is very good for supporting and encouraging green building initiatives here in Australia. But one of the problems at the moment with that organisation, actually, it looks like their government funding might be withdrawn, firstly. But secondly, and more worryingly, I think, is that they're looking at giving a green tick to timber that comes out of Victoria's native forests, which is absolutely terrible.
Got you. Now, Amelia, you've been involved with the Wilderness Society for how long now?
Well, on and off for probably more than 10 years, Adam.
What inspires you to do it?
I couldn't possibly consider spending my time doing anything else, really, at this point in time. I feel very fortunate that I can do this work to protect our forests primarily and actually earn a crust doing it as well. If I wasn't paid to do it, then obviously I wouldn't be able to support my family and I need to be able to do that. But I wouldn't consider doing many, many types of jobs. I couldn't possibly work in the corporate world. I couldn't possibly work in retail or sales. It's just not my cup of tea. I need to be doing this kind of work. Very motivated.
We chat when we were leading up to an interview about how busy you are. You can't contact me for 2 days because you're out in the bush somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't have internet connection. You don't have phone connection. You don't leave your job at the office. It's a quite full-on job. Does it inspire you to do that kind of job and make a difference each day?
Being able to go out to the bush is one of the most important and perhaps exciting parts of my jobs. I mean, it's really good being able to go and meet with a range of decision makers and watch their personal mind shift change and watch them be influenced by community debate and community perception as well, which is why our public meetings are so important. It's also really good to be able to go out to the bush and actually stand in this forest and experience the sounds and the sights and the smells, because that's the most important thing you're looking after.
It's no good sitting in your office and...
No. Yeah. And, I mean, how fabulous to be paid to go and walk in the bush and scope it out and see what birds are there and where the boundaries and perimeters of different protected areas are and talk to locals and hear about why they love their patch of bush and work out how we can work together to try and get a better management outcome for that area.
Sounds like a dream job to me. You're listening to Adam Barillet's All Natural on Joy 94.9, joined by Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society. We'll be wrapping up with how you can support the Wilderness Society in all the different ways that they need your support to do what they continue to do. You're on Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Courtney Acton. You're listening to Adam Barillet on Joy 94.9.
Adam Barillet in the studio, hosting All Natural for the very final time. Amelia Young from the Wilderness Society joins me. Amelia, wrap up quickly. Tell me about the meetings that you're holding over the next couple of weeks and why they're so important.
Okay, well, we've got three public meetings coming up, one in Richmond on the 2nd of June, one in Brunswick on the 4th of June, and one in Kensington on the 9th of June. If you live in the area or if you live elsewhere in Melbourne, please do come along to one of these meetings where you will find out more about how you can help to reduce climate change, protect Victoria's forests, and ultimately protect our future.
Now, do they all start at the same time?
The Richmond and Brunswick ones start at 6 p.m, the Kensington one at 7 p.m, and the information is up on our website.
Yep, of course, wilderness.org.au.
That's right.
Now, you're also holding a rally in a couple of weeks?
Well, that's right. The National Climate Movement is holding a rally. And in fact, there are rallies in most capital cities and other cities of Australia on that day, the 13th of June, so the week after World Environment Day. And this rally has been organised by the Climate Emergency Network and the local climate action groups across Australia. And the Wilderness Society is supporting this rally. And we're encouraging all of our members and supporters and volunteers to go along and attend because, of course, forests are an important part of the solution to climate change. But there is a whole other side to the climate story as well.
Whereabouts is the rally being held?
It's 1 o'clock, beginning at the State Library.
And 13th of June, of course, is a Saturday.
That's right.
Yes. Now, volunteers, you did your postcard delivery a little while, last week.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes.
So, it was a little while ago. Was that recently? Volunteers made a big contribution to that was one example of what volunteers do. Volunteers can do a whole bunch of things, can't
they? That's right. So the postcard example action is a really good example of how we rely on our volunteers. In the first place, we printed, I think, 15,000 of these postcards addressed to Premier Brumby. And our volunteers did a wonderful job of letterboxing these around their local neighbourhood. And people signed them and send them back to us. We then assembled them into a beautiful array of postcards and delivered them, in this instance, last week to Bronwyn Pike, who's in the seat of Melbourne, and earlier this week on Monday to Carlo Carli, who's out in Brunswick. He's the MP for that area. And we had huge numbers of black balloons and banners and postcards, and all of our volunteers came along and helped us deliver these to these members of Parliament and stood out the front and held banners and dressed up in possum suits and came along and filmed the event. And now there's a YouTube clip of the event and took stills photographs and contacted the media. There's a huge number of things that people can do to help, and really it can take just a couple of hours of your time every so once in a while. It doesn't even have to be every week.
Now, if I can pick off one little incident from that what you just did there, that campaign, the person who filmed that probably took an hour to film it and maybe 15 minutes to pop it on YouTube, and who knows how many people will now watch that footage and they'll actually make an impact. So that's just a couple of hours makes a big impact. So
that's
volunteers
right,
are definitely necessary as well.
Mm.
Now, you also, the Wilderness Society does take donations, or you can become a member or both.
That's right. We accept membership. And we rely on the generous support of our members and supporters for our work that we do. We don't accept any corporate funding because they're the people who are stuffing up the planet. And we don't accept government funding either because we believe that gives our organisation more integrity and independence if we're entirely separate from the government. So, yes, if anyone would like to support the work we do, please do become a member. You can follow the links on our website.
Amelia, thank you so much for being part of All Natural over the last 12 months. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio. You're the one organisation that's committed to actually always being in the studio as well. The others have done, as much as I am grateful, do phone interviews, but you've actually committed the whole hour once a month. It's been great to find out exactly what you guys are doing. And thank you so much from All Natural and Joy 94.9. Good luck with everything you do, and hopefully one day you have nothing to do.
Oh, wouldn't it be good? Thank you for having us, and thanks for your fabulous show, Adam.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au.
Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.